It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello guys, we've got another ATP Weekly coming up for you. We were just talking about how Dubai doesn't even feel like this week. Apparently not for John either, because it's not in the title. But for us with Mario, we're just like, oh, that's so long ago. And was it actually this week or the previous week? But no, Dubai is going to be part of the conversation. So will be Acapulco and Santiago. Let's just start. I mean, right? Let's actually talk about Dubai first, I suppose.
Yes, of course, exactly.
500s. Dubai, Acapulco, and it's a pretty big story, right? Hugo Humbert winning 6 ATP Tour finals now, 6-0, and just getting that title after the 3 match points saved against Hubert Hurkacz, another win with Daniil Medvedev, whom he now leads 2-1 in the head-to-head, 3-1 in the head-to-head, and just overall having an absolutely awesome half of the season, or already 6 months or so.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw, of course, a lot of times on my feed, on the social media, on Twitter, about the three players who have been able to win all their first 6 ATP Tour finals. And actually also, Humbert is the only one who only lost one set. It was also in his first one against Per, and then he won 11 straight sets in finals, which is actually crazy also because he faced some, very good players also. Very, very big story. A top 15 debut, which is also very, very well deserved for the level he expressed lately. He played his last 20 matches, won 17 of them, and won 3 titles in these 20 matches, played, because it was the last tournament played last season. He also had very solid results earlier, because there's also, of course, the quarterfinal in Shanghai and other big results. But actually, talking about title, of course, the last tournament he played last year, and then already 2 titles this year, and actually also a 500, which, it's biggest one also with Halle in 2021. A player who's able to show up well when it matters, big time players, not only for the 6 love in finals, but also because he averages, wins 1 out of 2 matches that he plays against top 10 players, 12 wins and 12 losses. So another very, very good record in, important matches is this one. Especially, he plays well can play well everywhere, but especially in this kind of conditions, his tennis, his lefty angles, you know, the ability to take also, especially this forehand early, find really, you know, great angles from both sides. Actually, is very, very good, and you know, pace in also against the biggest guys of tennis, and you know. A great week because two top 10 wins, one of them saving match points against Urkac in the quarterfinal, beating Medvedev once again, a player against which he has a positive record. And then, yeah, of course, the final, bring back the title, number 14 at this point, you know. He starts defend pretty big points in May because he won two big challengers on clay. So I don't know, but... you know, thinking if he can reach the top 10, you know, if he keeps producing very, very solid results, I think why not?
You are ahead of me because I was actually about to ask about that. But yeah, currently you're going better, number 14. There's still a pretty sizable gap between him and the top 13. Guys like Alex de Minaur, Tsitsipas, Dimitrov, Fritz, these guys sort of either just in the top 10 or on the outside looking in. They are about 500 points ahead of Hugo Humbert. So it's still a huge ask for Hugo Humbert to reach the top 10, especially that now that the clay season is coming. Not that he can't be competitive on clay, because as you said, the two challengers 175s that he won last year, they were actually like, yeah, just straight up showed us that he actually is able to perform there right now, even if maybe at the very beginning of his career, the records were horrible. But yeah, especially if he could produce in Indian Wells, Miami, these opportunities could open up. Obviously, he's one title, one final away from basically being in top 10 contention. Yeah. And I'm talking about ATP thousands. So, well, it's possible. It's not really that likely yet, yes, because exactly. Yeah, it's still a big gap to Alex de Minaur. So the current number 10 player, he lacks 830 points, but that's of course nothing, you know, to take away from his run and how basically that whole resurgence he's had in 2023, that was pretty insane. Shihari mentioning my new look. Yes, it is an ode to Jordan Thompson, Alex de Minaur, Steve Johnson, and everyone like that. But I will shave it pretty soon, I promise. It's not looking that great, but I also don't think it's, you know, that horrible. Yeah, I don't think, you know, today I'm not going to leave the house really, other than my morning jog and just being to the shop. But tomorrow, when I actually have to go out and meet some people, I'm not going to do it in this sort of style. Although I did that once, maybe like 2 years ago, I actually went to the university and to my
I think it's practice, fine, like, actually.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, it's fine, you know. I wouldn't want to be like this for a month, but okay. It's fine. I don't mind showing up on stream like this. And I also did the watch along yesterday for Tabilo and Baez. But of course, we'll get to that. And let's stop talking about my masters now. And yeah, Hugo Humbert, as Mario said, the two other players, Ernest Gulbis, Martin Kližan. Gulbis actually had that record for about 4.5 years. He eventually lost to Stefanos Tsitsipas in Stockholm 2018. Kližan also dropping his in 2018. Worth pointing out, though, two things. That Kližan also had two ATP 500 titles, just like Humbert.
Yeah.
And Gulbis, he actually had just 250s. Straight up, you know, all seven finals were 250s. And that seven finals thing is actually another one. So Hugo Humbert will honestly like try not to repeat Kližan and Gulbis in one way, because obviously if he plays more finals, he's going to lose one at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
However, they only went 6-1. So after winning six, they only earned one more. So, I mean, Kližan recently came back, but I'm assuming he's not going to make more ATP Tour finals. If he does, you know, salam alaikum, kudos to him. But anyway, I think that Humbert, if he only made one more final from this point onwards, that would be a massive disappointment. Yeah. So he will be trying to avoid that. And yeah, let's talk about the finalist, Alexander Bublik, who once again was just like fighting through all his matches. And, you know, that new mindset, that new version, the determination of Alexander Bublik, the ability to grind, to dig deep. That was pretty insane this week. Again, even against Tomas Mahac in the first round, he's almost down and out. He gets like blown off the court in the first set. He's clutch in the tiebreaks against Griekspor, maybe against Lehechka. He doesn't get a chance to show it. We're going to sort of talk about the whole mess with Rublev soon. But once again, it's a match that he definitely shows up that newfound hunger, newfound drive. Again, he shows it in that one. And of course, he loses to Hugo Humbert in the final. But all in all, I mean, this is another player who's like similarly to Humbert, breaking new records, breaking new milestones, because he actually earned his top 20 debut.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing maybe is that the question marks for the two players were different. You know, back also one year ago, Humbert maybe was a little bit more about, you know, his physical state, if he was be able to regain that confidence also in his game. And maybe Bublik, he was more like, you know, if it was going to finally show up with this kind of new fighting spirit, which is showing, not that he hasn't had, but usually he had on, you know, some peaking days. And then the following day, he was not the same on the court, and not the same approach. But yeah, he's doing unbelievable. His record also, again, when, you know, going one set down is astonishing this year, absolutely. But also in the final, which was 6-4, 6-3, but especially in the first set, Bublik had his chances. You know, in my opinion, of course, it's been very, very, very good tournament. And the top 20 is, of course, well-deserved, because right now he also has... Yeah, three titles gained in the past 15 weeks. And, you know, having some, maybe just the last couple of slams have been quite disappointing, because he hasn't won matches in both the US Open and the Australian Open. And so maybe this is probably the main disappointment in these months of, you know, great results. But overall, yeah, top 20 debut. Means actually that he's doing great things, and yeah, let's see how he keeps going also in bigger events, for example in the Sunshine Double, especially maybe in Miami, but also in Young Wells. I feel like he has all the qualities to do very well in, you know, all the kind of courts. If he just, you know, is there mentally, even in slower conditions, he's there, because he can, you know, come to the net. He has also good manuality. He can produce, you know, good things, in my opinion, wherever he plays, if he's there mentally.
Yeah, and as Mario mentioned, 8-5 this year when losing the first set. And he's actually been a very good front runner as well. 5-0 when he wins the first set. So 13-5 as a whole, definitely a great start to his campaign. I mean, I think around Montpellier, we were talking about some people potentially maybe overreacting to this and also being like, yeah, so he's going to be top 10 in a second. Like, you know, it's pretty tough to pull that off from the position where Bublik is right now. But obviously, it's a fantastic campaign, and also getting to the top 20 for the first time, that is an achievement that no one can take away from him. And let's talk about the big elephant in the room now, Andrei Rublev and his default. And we actually had some big news around that today as well.
Yeah.
So let's maybe start, you know, with like what happened. I mean, at least what we think happened, because, well, no one still knows. But basically, if you guys didn't watch it, if you were living under a rock the past couple of days, Andrei Rublev was not happy with a line call. He started shouting very sort of aggressively, very close to the line umpire. The line umpire claimed that he knows Russian, and that what Rublev said was not, well, it was basically swearing. It was, I'm not going to quote, but well, there are certain, let's say, there are people who disagree with this. Rublev himself said that he definitely was not speaking Russian. Whatever he said, the disqualification, you know, the default, it should have been more for, well, his actions rather than what he actually said. And how much, you know, it should have been for more like how much he was in the guy's face. It was kind of like half and half. But anyway, that was the decision of the supervisor. Rublev got defaulted. However, today we learned that he is actually going to be able to keep his ranking points, and that he is going to be able to, well, keep most of the prize money at least. So basically the punishment was, one, you lose the match and you get a fine of like $36,000 or something like that. Me personally, like when I saw it, because of that, of course, happened because he appealed that decision. Me personally, when I saw it, I was like, yeah, that's a pretty decent compromise. I mean, I think losing the match on the spot is like, you know, punishment in itself, and probably, you know, some sort of way of getting the umpires more respect in the future. But apparently this isn't a popular decision, and this isn't a popular opinion. What I've seen on Twitter so far, people are rather criticizing the ATP for like kind of hedging with that, you know, that decision to let him keep the points and the prize money.
Yeah, let's say that basically on Twitter, you always hear the most, you know, the side who's not happy. When he got defaulted, most of the reaction, at least, you know, for what I saw, but I also heard a lot of people who were, you know, agreeing with the disqualification, but the people who were disagreeing were more louder. And today, you know, probably the people who are not happy with the, you know, the decision feels more louder than the other side. But rather than this, I like to focus, of course, more on him, on Rublev. And, you know, I really hope that regardless of, you know, if the decision was too harsh, was right, was wrong, the decision of the points, regardless of all these things, I hope this really, you know, makes him reflect on some excesses he has on the court. Also, there have been some of this in the past months. At the beginning of last year, there was a moment, especially after we saw him picking the Masters in Monte Carlo, but even before and pretty, you know, throughout the whole clay season, we were watching an improved Rublev, in my opinion. Also, mentally, he had you know, fewer of these moments. But after Wimbledon in the last months of the year, and right now, it has become quite recurrent, not also on himself, when he does it on himself, but also I remember in Shanghai, I feel it was maybe after he had a match point, something like that. It was in the third set against Urkacz. He went to a photographer, I guess. Then it happened that the UTS exhibition, I don't know if it was constructed. At the beginning, I felt like that because it was weird him reacting like that during, you know, a match of that caliber, which is not going to change the trajectory of his career. Then I understood that it was maybe not, you know, not even built up as a situation. And then this one, you know, I really hope this feels for him as a wake-up call about himself, the way he should manage his anger better in the situation, because it's not nice at all, you know, what he did, especially if you put yourself in the position of the line judge, but mostly because of, you know, how close he got. And, you know, it's not fun when you face a person so angry, which is coming at you. So yeah, I mean, for sure, it's you know, personally, I tend to agree with the decision of this, you know, the disqualification, also because I feel like even if the situation must be you know, analyzed for themselves. But I also feel like that when it's not the first time for a player, it can be, you know, I hope he, you know, manages to, yeah, to do some reflection of what happened and to have, you know, a better approach to this anger issue that he is showing. That's all I would like to say.
Yeah, it's a wake-up call for Rublev. Hopefully he uses that. It definitely spawned some weird takes on Twitter. Like, there was all sorts of chaos happening, basically, because tennis got, like, a lot of publicity because of that incident, which maybe isn't great press, but, you know, there's no such thing as bad press. I tend to subscribe to that church. And, yeah, some players, you know, defending him because, well, he's basically a nice guy. Everyone likes him and things. But when, you know, they were calling for a default of Toff, right, in Budapest when she wiped down the mark, basically. But now screaming in the face of a line umpire is not a defaultable offense. I mean, yeah, hypocrisy will always happen.
Yeah, anyway, absolutely. Also, you know, of course, people needs to also, in my opinion, understand more that it's not that if maybe today I say I agree with the disqualification, I'm saying, you know, I don't like Rublev, I feel like Rublev is a bad person. You know, Rublev can be a very good person, but still, you know, can have made a mistake in that situation.
Yeah, the character of a tennis player, of course, shouldn't play into the decision on the spot. And I don't think he did really. I doubt that if that was any other player, the decision would be different. Wake up call for sure to maybe help him. Just focus on managing that anger issue that he's been having a little bit better. Wake up call for the whole tour. In the long run, maybe not as important because we're going to have electronic line calling soon at all events. Then again, you know, the chair umpire is going to stay there. The disputes are still going to be there. So, you know, if not towards the line umpires, then still these sort of things cannot be happening to the umpires as well. So to the chair umpires as well. So it's definitely an important event sort of for the tour going forwards. And we'll see if hopefully we don't get any other situations like this.
I don't think it's the end of the world, like a lot of people are making it, you know, through the situation, especially right now that he got the points. Basically, you know, I feel like the controversy must be stopped, even because I can agree with some people say, but that player once did that, got away with, I don't know, a game penalty. That player got away with a point penalty in that situation. I may even understand, but if we analyze the fact in itself, is it totally wrong? I don't think so. So, you know, it can be passed as a decision.
Yeah, most examples that people have been using as well have been like kind of just either unrelated to the actual case, or of course, at the same time, the Arthur Fils video was also, let's say, viral. And the way he talked to the supervisor in Santiago, which people have been comparing and even saying that it's way worse. Like, obviously, the language that was used there is, I mean, I wouldn't talk like that to a friend of mine, definitely not to a supervisor. And it wasn't great, but still, he didn't, like, you know, he wasn't as aggressive, at least with his body towards the supervisor. But anyway, it's kind of hard to find an example of a similar default, maybe like back in the 90s. But of course, it would be great if we just get better rules on this and just use them the same way every single time. These sort of events, actually, these sort of incidents actually usually sort of push that forward, because we will sort of have a precedent for that, a recent one as well. And just sort of hopefully we're not going to get any more things like that. But tennis has had an issue with like players kind of disrespecting the umpires a lot of the time. I guess maybe Jared Donaldson would be a similar in Monte Carlo a few years back. Right? Like that was probably even more.
I totally forgot about that until you said that. Yeah.
That was horrible. Like he could have been defaulted there. Like it's pretty similar, I think.
More or less.
But anyway.
Another one I think another one, if I'm not misjudging, was Fognini in Barcelona in 2021, maybe, or 2022. He was playing Zapata Miralles on a secondary court and got defaulted because he said something in a bad, you know, bad language, to someone who was on the court. I don't remember if it was the umpire of maybe even worse, you know, a person who was working on the court. Something like that happened, so more or less. But my memory is is mostly gone about that. I don't know if you...
Yeah, apparently the line judge reported him for using foul language following a foot fault. And then because he had a warning earlier, he was basically defaulted for verbal abuse towards judge who had... it's pretty different. However, in Donaldson's case, which I mentioned, he actually was not defaulted. I don't know if he got a warning. Probably, I would assume, but it was a dispute over a ball mark anyway. Let's leave that. Maybe from Dubai, one more thing we should talk about is just Daniel Medvedev's performance, who came back after After, of course, a month off, missed out on the tournaments in Doha and Rotterdam, the events that he was, of course, the defending champion at. Same here, he doesn't win it. But given that he won three matches, lost to Humbert, who's been a tricky matchup, just like most players who hit at least one shot very flat,
yeah.
I guess it's not the end of the world for him. I read some opinions as well that maybe Medvedev is going to struggle in the Sunshine Double because he has a lot of points to defend. I kind of don't buy that because, like, if you're in the position that Medvedev is, whether you're fourth, fifth, sixth in the world, I don't think it really matters all that much. So I don't really buy that. He's probably going to be very dangerous in Miami. Indian Wells, we'll see.
Yeah, I kind of feel that maybe Indian Wells can be that court when maybe last year he was playing also full of confidence coming from the three titles, as well as the clay also last year. I feel like the first half of last year after those three titles he had, you know, were 3 months full of confidence. So I'm actually interested to watch how he shows up, for example, next week in Indian Wells. You know, given that it's not going bad, of course. He has already reached a slam final this year. But, you know, still he's not coming from that, you know, 12, 13 match winning streak. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how he's going to approach a court which, you know, historically he doesn't like. I'm interested. But, yeah, as for Dubai, I mean, there was also a bit of a struggle with the shoulder. One match he was not serving at 100%, I think, against Sonego.
Yeah.
Overall, it's been, you know, yeah, three wins. I feel like it's okay. I mean, losing to Humbert, also considering the matchup struggle, you know, it's different if he would have lost, for example, in the quarterfinal to Davidovich Fokina, which is usually a player that even if he you know, dropped a couple of sets against, but, you know, it's more or less a favorable matchup. Humbert, it's player when you're not 100%, if you're Medvedev, if you're everyone, I would say, especially right now, you may lose. Yeah.
Yeah, let's move to Acapulco then, where Alex de Minaur claimed the title once again. He actually defended it. It is his second ATP 500, right? I mean, I'm not wrong about that.
De Minaur, yes, two consecutive Acapulco titles.
I don't remember him winning one previously. I mean, he definitely had finals. But yeah, his second ATP 500 title in Acapulco, defending champion. Of course, a big week for the Alex de Minaur household as well, with Katie Bolter getting a WTA 500 title. In fact, Alex, of course, right after the final, he had a 6 a.m. flight out of Acapulco to catch the San Diego final. He did see Katie winning against Marta Kostyuk, so definitely a massive week for him.
Yeah.
But sort of just to come back to the Mexican soil. He, of course, had a Rotterdam final, then he goes to Los Cabos. He was still kind of jet-lagged and tired, loses to Alex Mikkelsen. But after all, I mean, this week, he just kind of proves again how good he is this year. Winning against Stefanos Tsitsipas, it's a big step. I'm going to say it's for the second time, but for the first time at tour level, yes. And when it comes to the final as well against Casper Ruud, it was a pretty sensational performance too. So he is absolutely the king of Acapulco the past couple of years.
Yeah, the king of Acapulco, and actually only Sinner has won more matches on hard than him during the past 52 weeks. So he's winning matches with great consistency, especially on this surface, but actually also on grass. He had the Queen's final last year on the clay, trying to get better. And we knew also, we've seen him also doing good performances there. But above all, he's playing, you know, we knew that he had some great qualities, and, you know, he was able more or less show them kind of, you know, most of everywhere in every match, more or less. But right now it's getting different. This quality are, you know, still very solid, but he's actually adding, you know, more shape on the forehand, with also, you know, playing with also more aggressive when he can. And sometimes maybe he was tending to rely, when he was not full of confidence, on his, you know, defensive abilities and being that counter-puncher kind of player, doing that really well. But, you know, it cannot bring it in itself to, you know, to the position which he is on today and, you know, this month in general. And actually I'm pretty big in him, on him, because I feel like he's, if he keeps working like that and keeps maximizing his, the great qualities he has, I feel like he can be pretty dangerous also for the months to come, because I really see no reason for him to not keep doing well, because he's actually, you know, a great expression of modern tennis also, and, you know, having that ability to defend the court pretty well, but also when he wants to use a shorter ball from the opponent, come to the net and playing with some variety and serve gotten better. I feel like he can build on this, and who knows? He was a Masters finalist also last year, and why not for him to aim, given also all the players who won, you know, Masters, the list of Masters champion we have right now. I feel like that this can be a future goal for him.
Yeah, sort of similarly to Humbert, a massive run at an ATP 1000, a semi-final at the Slam, like that's really something that he's going to be sort of looking for. Matthew is actually asking about that now. Can Demino reach the gap towards the top 3-4 and scare them in a Slam? It's going to be rough. Like, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, that one, yes.
I mean, yeah, if he plays Djokovic in a Slam, I don't buy it. If he plays Sinner in a Slam, I don't buy it.
Yeah,
Alcaraz, I don't buy it. So there seems to be a bit of a ceiling still. However, Alex de Minaur is now currently number 3 in the ATP race. He has already gathered 1,295 points.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a very straight question here. Alex de Minaur, ATP finals this year. Yes or no?
Yes. My answer is yes. We are talking about the top 3-4 playing them in a slam. But if we think about all players who are 5, 6, 7, 8 in the world, and if we think also about his ability that he's had also to beat, for example, Medvedev in a couple of best of 3 matches last year, and I feel like, for example, a match like the one happened in Rotterdam against Sinner, he can win it once, in my opinion. I don't think that, you know, Sinner will end up probably with an amazing record against de Minaur, but I don't think it's going to be 18 love, actually, for example. So I can feel him closing the top 8 this year, you know, for the way he's playing and also doing it in a so consistent way also, not just, you know, grabbing big weeks here and there. And it's actually, yeah, I feel like, yes.
Yeah, he doesn't, it doesn't feel unsustainable. He definitely, like, if he doesn't slow down too much during the clay season, and I've long been a member of that, Alex de Minaur is not that bad on clay group. If he doesn't slow down too much there, I mean, he's already gathered up, as I said, 1,300 points. This is about, let's say, 33%. More like 40% of the work done in just 2 months. It is open. The opportunity is there. I actually would also lean towards Alex de Minaur can definitely be in the top 8 this year. I don't really know who he's going to sort of get out of that group. Potentially just take the 8th spot maybe. But over guys like Ruud, Tsitsipas, I feel like, yeah, he has a much better chance of getting there this year than they do. And he's definitely been proving that so far. When it comes to Casper, Matthew said that he expected Ruud to win it and surprised that de Minaur won comfortably. Honestly, I wasn't too impressed with the final performance of Casper. Like, yeah, he kept trying to blast the forehand, but is it actually the right idea against de Minaur? You know, just feed him pace and eventually he's going to get a chance to attack you, to actually counter. Yeah, it wasn't amazing. But all in all, of course, this has also been a very good start for Casper, much in contrast to the previous year. When, of course, he did that weird off-season routine where he goes, basically plays the Australian Open, then goes for an off-season in February, then comes back in Acapulco. He barely beats Guido Andreotti, loses to Taro Daniel. So it's very different.
Overall, it's a good start of the year.
Yeah.
overall, yeah, it's a good start of the year from Casper Ruud. Without the peaks that, for example, the Minor had. I mean, because if he wins the title here in Acapulco, I can consider this as a peak week, of course. I will still remain, you know, positive. Also because we have this comparison with last season, and so watching him at this, you know, at this level, I feel like, you know, if he keeps playing like he's done here in Mexico, he can hang around this, let's say, 9, 10, 12 position, you know, this range. And he can be, you know, very, very solid here. You know, he already won as many hardcourt matches than he did the 2023 season. So for sure, it's a big step. It's a big step onwards for him. Of course, losing, you know, back-to-back finals is rough. But honestly, I was expecting the Minor to win, if I have to be honest. I haven't watched it live. I watched it in the morning when I got up. And I already, you know, watched the score because I'm not that, I want to watch the match without knowing. So I just opened the flash score and so. And actually, I was not surprised for the way, you know, the Minor is playing right now. I feel like also, yeah, you can overpower him, but if you're Jannik Sinner, maybe, and you have this swing, but I wouldn't say that for Casper Ruud is actually so clever to, you know, keep blasting this forehand again and again without. You have to have also another plan, maybe blasting the forehand, but you have to be more vertical on your game. Try to keep some time away from the Minor, because if not, it's definitely rough for a player with, with Casper Ruud's game. So I wasn't really surprised to see this result. But overall, positive start of the year.
Yeah, I did wake up for it. So when it comes to Srihari's question, I mean, to me, you just can't beat Alex de Minaur trying to hit through him like more and more. If it doesn't work, like a big, powerful forehand doesn't work, you just try adding more, and no, it's not going to work. And especially for someone like Casper Ruud, like he actually should be, adding more shape, height, throwing off that timing for that de Minaur enjoys a bit more. He never really attempted to. He had issues on the second serve return as well. Like he was standing far back, but not actually getting anything on it. You know, de Minaur a lot of times was just able to turn defense into offense against him. And usually these, attacks on the second sort of opportunity in the rally, that was also like kind of painful for Casper for the most part. He wasn't too aggressive with his court positioning either when he was on return. And all in all, I mean, he just kept trying to add even more pace to the forehand and just fed the Minor in this way.
Yeah.
But Alex, definitely fantastic run. And also when it comes to what Mafi said about challenge for the Minor, is not tripping up at a big event for someone he's ranked higher than, for example, when he lost to Garin at Wimbledon, has a chance to make quarterfinals regularly at slams. So yeah, Garin at Wimbledon, like that's a loss that must be haunting him still. That was such a wonderful opportunity. But I just checked sort of who he's lost to at slams since. And basically, three top 10 players, Rublev, Medvedev, Djokovic, Carreño Busta, that's perfectly fine too, 2022 US Open.
Yeah, Berrettini on grass there
last year, sure. I mean, it's rough that he didn't take a set of Matteo, but still. And also Echeverri on clay. So, you know, at least he's avoided losses like this since Garin. Obviously, the Garin one is also like, you know, it's not just the name that hurts you. It's just, you know, that he was two sets to love up. And
yes,
such a big favorite in this match at that point, right? But
yeah, but I mean, 2022, de Minaur had pretty rough season, probably. If we consider 2021, 20, also 19, 23, 24, 2022 was probably his, more average season of them all.
So. And Gene's also asking, when will Ruud win a title above a 250? For now, it's not a big stain on his record, right? Because he has all these big finals. In case you guys don't know, Casper Ruud is 10-4 at the 250 level in finals. Above
and
it, 0-6. However, ATP finals, three slams, one ATP 1000 and one ATP 500. So Well, it's a great record still. If he ends his career without one, yes, we're gonna be talking as like about it as like a massive.
But it doesn't seem too far. Let's say like this, because also there are some 500 which are a little bit weaker. So if we're just talking about
which is
the
he
stats...
going to play, like which ones is he going to play, like which 500 is a chance for Casper? I would say Barcelona,
because...
maybe if Alcaraz is weaker 1 year, because Alcaraz has kind of dominated the event.
Feel like this year Hamburg will be quite strong because of the
Hamburg
Olympics.
Is a possibility, but yeah, that's a good point actually. And even last year, of course, Casper got blown off the court by Fields. So it might be that Acapulco is actually. Wait, why am I on the screen? But it might be that Acapulco is actually the best chance for him, sort of going forwards. It could be that this is the event that he's gonna have a best shot at, unless we think that he's gonna win an ATP 1000 on clay, which obviously he's capable of. It's not impossible. Yeah. Maybe last year he would have done it. You know, if he closes out the match against Holger in
right.
Rome semis and then plays Medvedev in the final. Probably is a bit of a favorite.
Yeah, it was a chance. Of course, you know, Medvedev was in great week. But it would be impossible. That's for sure. You know, if you have one surface you want to face Medvedev, of course, maybe the clay is your safest choice, even if we know that he got quite a few also good wins on clay. That's for sure. But yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah. That's of course right, Shrihari, but you know, he played Alcaraz, Djokovic, Nadal, Alcaraz twice actually, right? This is probably the best chance that he had, of course.
Yeah, and it was I actually think that the US Open final feels a bit more than just a four-setter. Actually, was the closest one. He had those set points, and at that moment, you know, we knew that Alcaraz could have been, you know, back for sure, but it was feeling like he was feeling all the 2 weeks, Alcaraz in that occasion. It was
close. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Casper was very close to taking the third set, and then he probably wins the match as well.
We talked one thing that Sriani wouldn't want us to mention. No, I mean, I actually felt that Medvedev would have been favorite in that final still for the way he was playing.
But Casper would have been in sure. with a chance, yeah. And then just to get an ATP 1000 on clay, that would be a possibility. No, Matthew, it's just because you can't see me, you know, in like full quality, like the photo of Jordan Thompson. I don't think it's actually that good, but I will shave it today or tomorrow, I promise. Humbert and Bublik, we've talked about them. Dubai has been a topic at the very beginning of the show. Shrihari says that Mafiu Hurkacz has been underrated for a long time, finished the past three seasons in the top 10. Not sure what caused that thought, actually. But the last three seasons in the top 10 is pretty crazy. It's just that, obviously, he never made the ATP finals other than being a substitute. So, like, he always finishes number 9, right? So,
classic Hurkacz.
Do you think Simon will change Medvedev's playstyle at all?
No, in my opinion, no. About changing, you know, game style. If we talk about adding something, maybe, you know, helping in tactic for some particular match, then maybe yes. But talking about the game style, I don't really think so.
Yeah, I think it's more so about like being smart on the court and choosing the right option at the right time. But maybe the Austrian Open was actually part of it already, because we know that now that Simon was also working with him before then, you know, just had some training blocks. So maybe that more aggressive mindset of Medvedev was also part of Simon's plan. Who knows? But I think like, yeah, it's just more about choosing the right option at a given moment.
I disagree with Hurkacz is a choker. I mean, his matches are mostly played on, you know, couple of points. So I don't know. I wouldn't.
No,
really
Mario. I mean, he plays a lot of tie breaks, but he actually doesn't have a good record in them. So many losses over the past 6 months where he doesn't deliver mentally. The one against Humbert here, United Cup being the biggest one, of course.
Yeah,
you
that's
also
right.
Have but Alcaraz losses.
I mean, for me,
Canada
choker
Cincy
is
double.
A much bigger word. Maybe I would say not clutch. But
yeah, if we think that these two are synonymous, choker and not clutch, I would say he's not a clutch player. No, he's not.
No, he can be clutch sometimes, everyone can be, but no. Yeah, choker, I don't really, you know, for me it means a bit like wasting, you know.
So who's a choker? Who's a choker?
Who's a choker? In my opinion, for example, a choke is when I'm serving 5-2 up. No, I'm asking about a player.
Who's a choker? Give us an example. If Hurkacz is not one, who's a choker?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a strong question.
I don't know. I'm getting caught.
You might have to throw someone under the bus. No, we're not gonna get an answer.
Coin flips.
I mean, yeah, match points up in tiebreakers, Srihari, sure, but like if you're match points up in tiebreakers, you know, and you have chances on your own serve, and you have something like against Zverev when his forehand suddenly breaks down, like, let's be honest, in these tiebreaks he is not delivering for the most part.
Yeah, that's right.
Already fragile forehand tends to break down more. He might struggle to get the first serve in sometimes. I don't think he's clutch. No, for the most part, like when we're talking about clutch players, he wouldn't be in the conversation. No, but that's kind of how I was just treating it. You know, clutch and choker and not clutch. I was sort of treating them as synonyms. Verdasco, Cilic, everyone has had their episodes. Andy Murray is even a choker, if you may.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, but these days, right?
I mean, everyone has had their episodes, basically. Everyone is a choker sometimes, is what I like to say. From Acapulco, we should also probably mention...
Yeah, we had a question about Draper, yeah?
Yeah, that's why I wanted to mention Draper now, yeah.
Srihari asked us the question.
Yeah, he basically said that Draper is overrated.
Well, I mean, I would say that he, in my opinion, even, you know, not having that consistency also, you know, physically to be, you know, a protagonist kind of week in, week out. We don't really see on our screen him, you know, healthy all the time. But he's actually getting better. I'm really finding him someone who's getting, for example, more solid from the baseline that I was expecting. And I tend to rate him. Let's say so far that at least, you know, of course the physical consistency is for sure the biggest issue, regardless of what we may think about his game and you know how his game can where his game can bring him. For sure, the physical consistency has been his bigger issue, and even this week he was playing well. You know, got ill, and actually he got ill before the tournament, they were saying, and so it actually was also a very, very good effort to, play that well and reach the semis if he was ill since the beginning of the tournament. No, I feel like he has the quality to keep improving, actually, in my opinion. Then we have to understand, you know, what we are talking about, because if we're talking about... you know, Grand Slam contender, maybe I feel like we are still far from that. But if we are talking about growing, gaining ranking position, being, for example, a top 20 player this year, as he was mentioning in an interview at the end last year, when asked, you know, about his goals, I feel like that it is super, super possible if he is fine physically.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, depends on your expectations. But top 20 this year, I would actually, believe in that for sure. So if we're thinking of like, yeah, maybe Grand Slam contention, being in the top 10 even, he's probably...
Yeah, yeah, even, you know, ATP Finals this year, for now we've been...
Yeah, no, that's not happening. But I can say with a lot of confidence.
You know, him getting closer to guys in the ranking, like, for example, Tiafoe, Paul... these positions, I feel like, yes, sure.
Yeah, he's not worse than them to me either. And yeah, this was a pretty solid week for him. Of course, eventually he doesn't end up, having enough left for the third set tiebreak against Alex de Minaur. We know that the Mexico conditions can be pretty rough. Holger Rune felt it too. He was up in 3-1, 4-2 against Casper Ruud and big leads on serve in these games in the third set. So it's kind of like a similar to, I don't know, Monte Carlo
story. Yeah, for the second year in a row, because I also remember the final last year who played against de Minaur. Well, I mean, who knows if next year is going to change landscape. But yeah, overall,
but still, it was a great week for him, right? Like, it was a bit of a revival, and just gives you some hope in terms of Holger for Indian Wells and Miami, especially as now, of course, he has sort of, at least for now, the coaching situation is like stabilized, and he's actually going to have someone traveling with him all the time. Things should be getting better. Will they? Who knows? The clay season, of course, he has a lot to defend, but actually Sunshine Double could be a bit of an opportunity if he can keep delivering. But yeah, otherwise, I guess we kind of are done with Acapulco. Let's talk about Santiago and take this home. In Santiago, who took the title home was Sebastian Baez. And Sebastian Baez wins nine matches in a row. Top 20 debut alongside Bublik, of course, this week. They both did that. And also top 5 in the ATP race. Pretty insane, but you know, he went 13-2 in the Golden Swing. We just said that Alex de Minaur Turin, yes. Hugo Humbert, probably not. Sebastian Baez, no. However, it's still a phenomenal start to the season.
Yeah, but absolutely. He's just able to do what all the other players are not able to do. And so, yeah, fair. He played really, really solid month. Getting those points which are going to help him, but I'm interested also to look forward, regardless of what we are thinking about ranking, about this stuff I'm not interested in right now, but I'm still interested, for example, if in these 2 weeks Master, for example, on clay, not having, for example, the projecting round 3 against the top 8 seed, what can maybe bring him, and I feel like he can, he can aim at having, some good run in a bigger event, maybe a quarterfinal or something like that. Especially on clay, he's doing really well, and he's proving to be, let's say, way better than the average of these players who like to play on clay. Which are the main characters of, the Golden Swing this year. And yeah, so I would say well deserved. He's actually very good. He's also very good usually when he gets to these semifinals and finals, but also because he's this week he proved to be just better than the other players who was facing. Even in Santiago he lost a couple of sets, but yeah, definitely a great start of the season, and let's see what he brings on in the following weeks. I feel like Indian Wells could not be the worst possible court for him. Then there is the clay, so yeah, why not giving a chance to him to show some good tennis again.
Yeah, I feel like the narratives hasn't sort of changed too much when it comes to Baez after his Rio run. I mean, he just basically gets into the top 20, of course, but still the big thing will be like how good he can be in like European clay ATP thousands, for example. Yeah, events he's just hasn't done too well at. Roland Garros as well, something that is a bit of a stain, especially given that Zverev loss that he had years back when he had a great chance to beat him, but of course was just like slowly getting onto the tour at the time. Shrihari, when it comes to Dubai and Acapulco, I think the gap is going to be widening, and actually it has already widened this year, because if you think about it, like Dubai had Medvedev and Rublev, sure, but after that there was a bit of a plateau. Like Acapulco had a much stronger field overall, and if you with what you said, like it's closer, it has similar conditions, but also from this year onwards, it will have one more very significant advantage, and that is having Los Cabos. Because previously, if you were going to go Acapulco, Indian Wells, you probably had to, like, I don't know, switch from European indoors or something like that. Yeah. Now you can realistically go let's say Australian Open, skip a couple of weeks. Los Cabos, Acapulco, Indian Wells, Miami. It's a fantastic schedule. You can also use Dallas and Delray Beach if you want to, and then you just stay on the continent for such a long time. So I think the gap is going to be widening. Obviously, Dubai has also one more thing going for it, which is money. However, Acapulco doesn't pay poorly either. So I think Dubai, if they not like, if they
yeah, let's say that maybe Dubai, Dubai maybe had you know, at times Djokovic, Medvedev likes to go there. So has if I have to think about Sinner, maybe I'm thinking about Sinner potentially going to Dubai over Acapulco, given the, yeah, you know, how the conditions can play out. So maybe about the top four or five, maybe Dubai would be, you know, the best choice for some of them. But, you know, for these players like Zverev, Tsitsipas, I feel like they, you know, Zverev not playing good in Acapulco, actually, when even if he won the tournament in 2021, but lately... But yeah, I agree with you. Seems like for most of the players is a more sensible decision, considering that the conditions are more similar to you know what they find in Indian Wells. But of course, also Dubai has a good field overall. That's for sure.
Yeah, Dubai of course used to be like a Djokovic Federer dominated event, but Federer especially just loved it and basically loved the conditions. Acapulco was not as strong of a, I guess, a presence yet on the tour. Right now, Dubai will actually be definitely, I think, the weaker event in years to come. Sinner, yeah, Sinner, it's a bit of a, let's say, 50-50 in terms of where he will go if he wants to play that week, Dubai or Acapulco in next years. It could literally come down to the appearance fee, I think. Do they pay them extra to go to Dubai? I mean, the top seeds for sure. Like, I think Medvedev is definitely getting something out of that. Rublev, probably, maybe. After that, probably it's a stop. I doubt that Dubai is paying Hurkacz to play there. Or Kachanov. No. That's probably a stretch. Well, only 10 years ago is, yeah, I mean, it's been a while already, you know? It's not like that. But yeah. Acapulco basically should be a stronger proposition, I think, right now than Dubai over the next years. Mostly also because of Los Cabos. And these two events will help one another, just massively in terms of the quality of the field. The fact that you can play that 250 and then 500. Medvedev and Rublev, yeah, I mean, they like the venue. They get good results.
There.
They'll be coming back and also they'll be paid well, probably, as long as they are top players. But... I think all in all, otherwise, you could already see that the quality of the field in Dubai is weaker than Acapulco this year, which, of course, this is the first year when we have that Mexican double in Los Cabos and Acapulco. And that probably plays a huge part in that as well, other than, yeah, just being closer and having more similar conditions. Anything else from Santiago you want to touch on? I mean, we could go in depth here and just sort of focus on, you know, Pedro Martinez, Corentin Mutai, Alejandro Tabilo. Is there anything you want to talk about regarding that event?
Well, I would say that Tabilo, for example, is building. You know, getting points. He won a title in Auckland, reached another final, won the doubles title. So it's been definitely a good week for him. Overall, I'm just Santiago usually feels to me, I have to be honest, kind of the end of this, Golden Week. Also, not helped by the fact that there is Dubai, Acapulco. So maybe the attention gets a little bit away. For sure, even talking about 250s, I always feel like, for example, Buenos Aires is the strongest 250 of the Golden Week, the one, you know, which gets more attention, even because even the big players, if they choose to go there, they do that double, usually Buenos Aires and Rio, because then maybe they want to switch already on the hard courts. But yeah, overall, it was a solid week for some of these players, for Mutai for sure. I enjoyed watching the semifinals between him and Tabilo. So I feel like it's been a solid week, but maybe not many storylines.
Yeah, the bounces on that court says 5-star yeah. QB 10. Definitely, yeah. Santiago probably the worst prepared court on the main tour, honestly. I don't really know if there's any... Well, Newport, I guess. But Newport, it's not like... Well, it's grass. It's a different thing. But yeah, we had a lot of stuff like this. And also, Arthur Fils blamed his injury that he had in the quarterfinals on the court. Not on the bounces, but, you know, on it being uneven. So that was also a topic. Also, the Chilean support. And John, don't worry. That's actually why I'm speeding up Santiago, because I know that we still will talk about Indian Wells. Of course, it's going to be like a very easy, like just a very low key preview, because we still don't have the draw. But yeah, that's why I'm speeding up. Also, yeah, Indian Wells draw comes out at about 1 a.m. midnight if you're living in Europe. And Srihari was mentioning first title coming soon for Muter. I mean, it's still somewhat unlikely, but now that he has his two-hander back. Now that he has his two-hander back, maybe it's a possibility. Let's see him follow this up first, but certainly he should have, you know, strong chances to return to the top 100 very soon, despite losing in that semifinal where he already could have clinched it. And yeah, now that he's just healthier, he probably should be a stronger player again. And then, yeah, as I said, I think on the watch-alongs this week, it was kind of brutal for him to get injured in the best moment of his career, 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah, Naples, that court was probably the worst. I don't know if it was the court there, right, though, because it was like the sand and the courts organized on the beach. But yeah, I guess it makes sense. But maybe like Jean says, just Naples should be forgotten. And Naples did not happen. Although Lorenzo Musetti will be sort of trying to tell us, no, Naples.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Naples, I'm a hard
especially in this moment of his career.
Yeah, Lorenzo Musetti will be trying to push this narrative that Naples was a very important event, and I mean he's right, but it was a one-time thing. Let's forget about it. Sure, that's definitely a fair point that Naples was a thing and actually was organized like it was organized. A friend of mine went there and. Well, was not too happy about the whole thing and almost didn't see any tennis. But of course, eventually they managed to play out the event. And yeah, speaking of Indian Wells, of course, that's what's coming. Today we have the first day of the qualifying, tomorrow the second day of the qualifying. And then on Wednesday, we kick off the main draw. It's of course the extended ATP Masters 1000 event. Indian Wells has been like that for years, so it's not a surprise. But it is the first one we have this year as well, the ATP 1000. No draw yet, as we just mentioned. It's going to be in about 6-7 hours. So basically, what can we say without the draw, Mario? What are your sort of thoughts on, you know, players who are the main contenders?
I will really disappoint everyone saying that I have very little clue right now, especially without the draw, because, the court is great for Alcaraz, but of course there is a bit of a question mark, maybe. Sinner should be fine if he's in form. Maybe this slow court is not the best for him, but he has been able to show good things last year, and I think he can produce a good performance this year also. Djokovic, who knows how he is. Potentially he can play well. Same thing about Sinner, I would say, meaning that it's not maybe the best. Maybe a bit quicker would be better.
I mean, Djokovic has won it like what, seven exactly. times?
Yeah, five times. But maybe, you know, just mentioning if he's not at his at the best form, maybe he can, you know, struggle a bit. But it will depend on a lot of things. I mean, for example, the draw, who are going to be the, you know, the toughest players, where they are going to land in the draw. And so who of these players are going to be more, let's say, prone to an eventual surprising early loss. And then also about the players ranked 5, 6, 7, it's tough to predict who's better than the others right now, because all of them are at times playing good, but maybe not showing us enough to consider them close to the top four in the rankings. So I have some doubts.
Yeah, it's tough to say anything really of note there because, well, the main favorites are the top three. And that's kind of, you know, that's how it's going to be at most events. Maybe Medvedev is going to join them in Indian Wells, probably not. And yeah, actually what Srihari is mentioning, that's kind of the biggest storyline maybe, that Djokovic is coming back to Indian Wells 2016, 2015, 2014, as Gene says, he wins it. Mm-hmm. However, after that, he loses to Kyrgios in 2017, fourth round, then 2018, he loses to Taro Daniel in the second round, and 2019, he loses to Philipp Kohlschreiber. Not his best moments. I mean, these aren't really losses that will be blamed on the conditions or something because, well, these losses just came in...
Yeah, let's say probably 2019 was the most disappointing one.
Yeah, but like both Indian Wells and Miami were pretty horrible for him.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's, like, it's kind of like Canada Cincinnati in 2014, where you're like kind of treating these results differently because it's not just one loss out of nowhere. It's actually a
patch,
at least two titles.
Yeah.
So or at least two tournaments where he doesn't play well. So, well, we're going to see. I mean, this is definitely a big storyline that he's coming back there because, well, this is a court that he will be... well, just coming back to the event that he will be coming back to. Of course, the last couple of years he couldn't play it because of his vaccination status as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cincy actually is very different. Like, since I've said it many times on the show already, but Cincinnati for the 2023-2024 sort of more aggressive big server version of Djokovic is probably the best court in the world, actually.
Despite him
like struggling to win it over the years. Yeah, despite him struggling to win that over the years.
That's an interesting one
from Srihari. Uh-huh. So he hasn't really played on a slow hard court since Australian Open 2020.
Well, opinion, he did. No.
Well, yeah, Paris, you know, ATP.
Yeah, Paris is low. But I feel like
outdoors though. Yeah, outdoors maybe it actually tracks. Like outdoors, he probably hasn't because he's mostly played what, Australia, US Open. Shanghai, Cincinnati. Well, Shanghai is actually not since 2019, I guess. But like, yeah, Australia, US Open, Dubai, Cincinnati. That's kind of what he's been playing on outdoor hard courts.
Yeah,
so outdoor
right.
hard courts, yeah, it's actually true.
I got fooled. I got fooled because in 2023 he was calling the Australian Open court slow, slower than usual. So that's why. But it wasn't. So yeah, it's right. I never thought about that because Paris, you know, usually comes to my mind. It's not that fast, that quick. So, but yeah.
Yeah, Paris and Astana. But again, that's indoors. So yeah, it actually makes sense. And it adds to the excitement regarding Djokovic's performance. Also, the fact that he hasn't played since the Australian Open. Obviously, you're going to have Alcaraz as well with what Mario said, like little practice, basically. I wonder how good he's going to be by Friday. Whenever he plays, really Friday or Saturday, with about a week of practicing, he probably should be fine. This is one of his best courts in the world for sure.
Yeah,
I would assume that he's going to do well, but who knows?
This is going to be decided by Rafa Nadal because Nadal will play first round on Thursday, and so I guess whoever will be in his side of the draw will play on Saturday the first match.
Maybe Rafa Nadal will play Carlos Alcaraz in the second round or Novak Djokovic in the second round. Everything is possible. The draw, of course, we still don't have it. But for now, let's just say Alcaraz, Djokovic, Sinner, whichever sort of order you see fit, these are the main three favorites. Otherwise, it's very hard to say anything without the actual draw. And that draw will be in about 6, 7, 8 hours. Basically, you guys can check that. We will also be checking that, but we'll see. Maybe we will have some thoughts that we will put out on our Twitter feeds. Maybe we won't. Qualifying today, though, definitely I invite any of you guys to watch, as it's going to be a lot of good action. Of course, it's one of the biggest qualifying draws as well all year. Two rounds, not like at the slams, but still, I think maybe 48 players, is it? I think it's 12 qualifiers and, 48 players. So definitely a lot of stuff to follow. Medvedev, for example, coming back for the first time since, playing for the first time since the Austrian Open. That's definitely quite huge. Artur Kazoy is in the qualifying. Lukas Klein, one of the more, the more informed players of the season so far. So definitely going to be quite exciting. And I guess with that, we can finish, right? The draw will definitely not rig it. Draw makers will do anything but put Nadal in Djokovic's section. I don't know. I mean, if we are going to get a Nadal Djokovic match, maybe that's sort of the requirement. Maybe they have to play early because who knows where if Nadal can actually reach let's say a quarterfinal, semifinal, even in the clay season. I mean, we haven't really seen anything yet that would suggest that he can or can't. We just don't know yet. So basically, it could be, you know, it is a possibility that the only chance to get them playing again for like the 60 whatever time could be an early round.
I couldn't care less about another meeting. Sorry, I had to say it.
I mean, Mario, I'm on your side, you know. Owen will
be tired. Like, oh, I'm tired of the big three.
The most exciting match ever. But I'm
tired.
Really? Eh, meh. But anyway, you know, we're just weird. We would much rather see, I don't know, Djokovic playing against... I'm trying to come up with a random player. Borna Gojo came to my mind. Of course, Borna Gojo is injured. So I don't know why Borna Gojo came to my mind. Also, Djokovic played Borna Gojo at the US Open.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, we're just starting talking like absolute BS right now. So let's just stop it right here. Thank you to all the guys in the chat. Thank you to Mario. Of course, I don't know what our plans are going to be actually regarding ATP Weekly during Indian Wells, but whatever happens after Indian Wells, it's going to be back. And yeah, let's just see how the draw makers, as the guys in the chat called it, would sort of, just produce it. And Gene, I mean, we all know Nadal will get smoked. If they play in Indian Wells, second round, yes. If they play in the clay season and he actually gets a few good events in, maybe not. If they play on hard courts, probably yes. Anyway, thank you, Shihari. Thank you, Gene. Thank you to everyone else in the chat. And we'll see you guys some other time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We are ending before it... I just wanted to say that we are ending before I'm going to be in deepest, darkest Poland again, as it's currently, you know, almost dark outside my window already. Anyway, bye. Now we can actually end.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this video, make sure you hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and click that notification bell so you don't miss out on all things tennis.
Sports Social Podcast Network.